This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. In today's episode, I'll be discussing the Spurs' loss to the Houston Rockets, Malachi Branham's improved play since the trade deadline, and whether or not the Spurs can hold off setting a franchise record for most losses in a single season. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode. So before I begin with the three topics or questions that I want to address here on the Spurs Cast, you know, I just want to talk about how important timing is when you're recording a podcast. So I am recording this episode on Wednesday evening, which is coming off right after the Spurs lost on Tuesday to the to the Houston Rockets. They were on the road and lost to Houston. It's just incredible. Just again, timing. Had I recorded on Monday night, the Spurs, I would have been talking about two wins in a row against Oklahoma City and then also against the Indiana Pacers. But because I am recording this on a day off when the Spurs are off on Wednesday, I have to unfortunately cover a Spurs loss when they were just playing pretty well, like I said, against the Oklahoma City Thunder, which I did cover that game in the most recent episode. But then I didn't get to cover the Indiana Pacers win for the Spurs against the Pacers. That was one where the Spurs looked really good in that game, but unfortunately they went to Houston and they ended up losing this game. So my first question, as I've been doing in these recent Spurs Cast episodes, is kind of asking three different questions. So the first one is, what happened on Tuesday in Houston on the road? Okay, so as I looked through all the numbers and, you know, went back and watched some film, there was just three main takeaways that I really took away from why the Spurs lost this game to Houston. One was the Rockets' paint defense. Houston really made it difficult for San Antonio offense. Two was the Rockets' focus on Victor Wembanyama defensively. They really made him their core game plan of trying to slow him down and make it difficult for him. And I'll talk about some factors of why Wemby had a tough night here, and not just because of Houston's defense, but also because more so himself as well in some circumstances that he entered with the game. And then third was also, I would say, also the Rockets on offense, their attacking style against the Spurs' defense on the inside. So let's first begin with the Rockets' paint defense. So the Spurs did have a tough time against Houston's defense here. The Spurs only scored 44 points in the paint against Houston. They only shot 54% in the paint against Houston. And also, even on the closest area where to the basket, the dunk layup range, the Spurs only made 59% of their baskets there. Now, you might ask yourself, is this something that Houston typically does to an offense? Yes or no? And the answer is yes. The Rockets did enter this game ranked top 10 in holding opponents to the fewest paint points. They were ranked ninth entering this game. So again, focusing on the paint scoring for the opponent is something that Houston does a very good job of in this current year. When I went back and watched some film and also looked at some data, you know, one thing you could definitely see, whether you're watching it in a replay of the film or you're just watching it in live action, was the Rockets really made an effort to surround the paint with multiple players. They had multiple players who had their feet or their bodies within the paint area. They were constantly swarming the Spurs anytime they try to attack inside, especially Victor Wembanyama. And they were purposely on a lot of Spurs players, they were taking that gamble of leaving those Spurs players open from the three-point line and you know, just letting them shoot wide open threes, and that way they could have multiple bodies in the paint. And this strategy on this night did work for Houston. One of the players, if you go back and watch just his demeanor on defense in terms of letting Spurs players shoot, was Alperen Şengün of the Rockets. He had multiple different Spurs players shooting against him. Blake Wesley, Jeremy Sohan on possessions, Keldon Johnson. He would purposely just hang out in the paint, even just throw one arm out, at those players while his feet were literally inside the paint. And those Spurs players would take those threes. And most of the time they were missing them, as we look at the data here. So like I said, the Rockets deliberately left the Spurs players open from three. The only two players, when I went back and watched the film, who really got a lot of contest on their shots from three were Devin Vassell and Victor Wembanyama. The Rockets really tried to put a hand in the face of either Devin or Victor whenever they shot from three, which, of course, those are the Spurs' go-to players. So that makes sense why the Rockets really focused on those two players when they did try to shoot from outside. The Spurs had a tough time on their wide open threes. They only made 32% of their wide open threes against Houston. And this was a number that, or a stat that had been trending well for the Spurs. In their past six games, they had been shooting very well in wide open threes. They had been shooting 40% or above on wide open threes. And this is part of why they beat Oklahoma City, why they beat Indiana, is because some of their typical players who don't usually shoot well from three actually had some good shooting nights. Well, back in Houston now, it kind of reverted to the norm for the Spurs players, and some of their shooters who usually struggle against Houston. And you can tell that the Rockets definitely left the Spurs players open, because 61% of the Spurs' threes were attempted wide open. And then, so that was one part of it, was that the Rockets were able to focus on the Spurs' interior scoring in the paint because they left shooters open from three, and they really took that gamble against the Spurs' defense there. Okay, so the next part of why the Rockets won this game was I wouldn't say it's a tough night or uncomfortable night for Wemby. I would say it was more a weird night for Wemby, just for several circumstances for him entering this game against Houston. One, we didn't know for sure if he was going to play. Going into the game, he was on the injury report, listed with left shoulder soreness. He was questionable, and the team had said that he was going to be basically a game time decision. And sure enough, right before tip off is when we learned that he was going to indeed play. But he had injured that shoulder a bit in that win against Indiana the few nights before. And here's why he could never really get into a rhythm or get comfortable in this game was just the opportunity that he wasn't really on the floor for a lot of big chunks of the game. So we did see that about midway through the second quarter, he ends up leaving the bench when he subbed in on the bench, and he ends up going to the locker room. And at that point, he stayed in the locker room whenever he left in the second quarter all the way until after halftime. And even going into halftime, I was constantly checking my phone to check, are the Spurs going to issue an injury report saying Victor's out for the rest of the game? You know, we didn't quite know what was wrong with him, but he did go to the locker room in the second quarter, and he didn't return at all for that first half. And then we did see that in the third quarter, he went out to warmups, and then he was ready to go, and he played in the rest of the game. So again, as far as him building a rhythm, kind of staying out there, there was definitely something going on injury-wise why he left to the locker room in the second quarter, and then he didn't return until the second half. Then when he starts the third quarter, he only gets a few minutes on the floor, and then he gets himself in foul trouble. He ends up picking up four fouls total. He had already had some prior fouls, but he ends up getting some quick fouls there in the third quarter. And so basically he had to sit on the bench for most of that third quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, he finally returned. He was able to play most of the quarter, but then that's where the Rockets' game plan, where they really focused on him. So what they did was they mainly had Dylan Brooks, you know, a smaller player, but one of the better defenders in the league, really try to be physical with Victor and really try to push him off of his spots. And then not only that, anytime Victor put the ball on the floor, like I said about this, the Rockets, how they left Spurs players open from three. Well, what they did was their other players kind of just swarmed Victor and surrounded him. They were really aggressive in trying to get the ball out of his hands, or just swarming him constantly. And trying to pick at the ball away from him, that it made it a tough night for him, whether he was trying to dribble himself away from that defense or whether he was trying to find like a bounce pass in between passing lanes. There was just always multiple bodies, 3 to 4 bodies around him at all times. And because of that, he did have a tough night there on the offensive end against the Rockets' defense. Like I said, multiple players were swarming him. And so, you know, even for a bad night for him, you know, or a tough night for him, he still ends up with 10 points. That was his fewest points scored since December 7th. But again, I do want to note that he didn't really play a lot in the second quarter, nor in the third quarter. And then he still finishes with 11 rebounds. So he gets himself a double-double, 7 blocks in this game, more than he's had in a while since his 10-block game. 3 assists to 6 turnovers. Again, that was more so the Rockets' pressure on defense and how they were making it a tough night for him. And then 4 fouls in those 31 minutes for Victor. And so, you know, we talk about the Rockets' strategy of focusing on Victor specifically and really trying to make it tough for him while basically abandoning some of the other Spurs players, and why this worked out for them. And this is something that Rockets head coach Ime Udoka talked about after the game. He was basically asked about Dylan Brooks' defense on Victor. And here's what Udoka said. He said, "Yeah, that was the main thing, doing his Dylan Brooks' work early. No matter where Victor was, top of the key or the elbow, he had a body on him the whole game or the whole time. Brooks denied a bunch of catches, pushed him off his spots, and then even on the post, he was fighting him and pushing him off the blocks in there. Then when we had help and good rotations behind it, so I loved our versatility on defense. I think our rotations were on point. We were switching a bunch of their actions. Fred Van Vliet and Jalen Green were on him, Wemby, briefly, and our bigs came over and kind of kicked those guys off. So it started with Dylan for sure, and then the rest of the team aided as well." So again, if you go back and watch the film, you can see that multiple times, you know, the Rockets had multiple defenders swarming Victor, and they were really making it a tough night on him. Just a lot of different bodies getting in there anytime he tried to put the ball on the floor. And of course, because the Spurs didn't have a great night from 3-point land, it was allowing the Rockets to do that to Victor, to swarm him constantly and make it a tough night for him, because the outside shooter for San Antonio, you know, weren't there to make them pay when they did gamble and try to basically swarm Victor there. So again, it was one of the tougher nights for Wemby, which we haven't seen a lot of in his rookie season. But again, there was multiple factors going into it, like I said, about him leaving the game in the second quarter, him already being on the injury report prior, and then also getting into foul trouble. And the last takeaway from this game, one of the big keys why the Rockets got this win, was also just there on offense, how much they were attacking the the Spurs on the inside. So the Rockets did finish with 70 paint points against the Spurs. Typically, they don't score that many. They usually score about 49.9 paint points, the Rockets. So again, this is 20 points more than they usually do, average. And then also I would give credit to two players that who are deliberately trying to attack San Antonio inside. That was Alperen Şengün, who ends up with 34 of his 45 points in the paint. So again, 34 paint points for Şengün, whether it was right at the rim with those little hesitations and layups, or whether it was with dunks, or even from the floater range. He has a really good good little pop shot there from floater range. So Şengün was a problem there again for the Spurs' defense. And then also I would also say I was very impressed by Jalen Green. Normally he's a player who takes a lot more jump shots from the outside from what I've seen from him in recent meetings with the Spurs. But on this night, he was very, very deliberate about trying to attack the Spurs' defense. And we see that here where he finishes with 18 of his points in that dunk layup range. So basically within 4 feet of the rim, he finished with 18 of his 23 points there on those dunk layup range type attempts. So Jalen Green was very aggressive against San Antonio's defense. And then even one thing I tweeted this on Twitter was I wanted to give Şengün some credit here because, you know, Wemby didn't just like, you know, he just didn't get everything against Wemby. Wemby ended up with 7 blocks on the night, and five of them were against Şengün. So he got blocked multiple times. It's probably more than I've seen Wemby block one individual player, but it did not deter Şengün. He continued to attack Wemby inside. And then we saw there in the third quarter, he got Wemby in some foul trouble. So, you know, they regardless if Wemby was there or not, they were going to continue to attack the Spurs' interior defense, the Rockets, to help pick up this win for Houston. For the next question I had was one that I've kind of noticed. Again, I wanted to see where the numbers match the eye test. It's just basically, has Malachi Branham's play improved since the trade deadline? So the reason why I chose these two different timelines, so from start of the season to the trade deadline to then after the trade deadline to today, March 6th, is that, you know, I've seen Branham be a lot more aggressive. I've seen his shot selection looks like it's improved. And so I really wanted to see what the numbers, what the picture looked like from the numbers when we ran them in those two different timelines. And sure enough, it looks like certain specific areas that he has improved right now from the trade deadline when Doug McDermott got traded to today, because that's basically what Branham's doing. He's taking a lot of Doug's minutes that were there in the rotation. So as I look at the numbers, again, they look pretty similar in some different areas from these two different timelines. There's some key stats that do stick out to me from before trade deadline to after trade deadline. So one of them is his minutes have gone up about 2 minutes. So again, a little bit more times Pop's giving him right now out on the floor. His points have also increased from 8 points to now 9.7. But I think the big takeaway is his three-point shooting has really improved. Not only his accuracy has gotten better in this time frame, but also his attempts have gone up. So before the trade deadline, Branham was shooting 30% from three. Fast forward to these last 11 games from after the trade deadline, he's shooting 43% from three, and he's taking more attempts. Before, he was only taking 3 three-point attempts a night. Right now, he's taking 4.3 three-point attempts. So again, he's not shying away from that three. If it's there for him, he's going to take it. As far as some of his other numbers, like his rebounds, his assists, his turnovers, steals and blocks, a lot of those are pretty similar. There's not really too much a differential, nor is there any differential in the free throw shooting. However, when we look at his shot chart, there is some, when we look at both, you know, before and after shot charts, there is some shots that he's kind of taken away from and some shots that he's adding to. So for one, he has seen a 3% increase in attacking the paint. So he's getting to the paint a little bit more in his shot selection since after the trade deadline. He has also seen a huge decrease, 8% decrease in his shots from mid-range. So he's really going away from that mid-range shot right now. And he's really sticking to either getting shots inside in the paint or at the three-point line. And also, as I mentioned there, he's had a 4% increase in his three-point attempts. So as I mentioned, he's shooting pretty well from three right now, 43% since after the trade deadline. But one stat that really sticks out to me too is that we do see that defenses still leave him wide open. You know, they're not afraid of him from three. And so he's now taking advantage of those opportunities. So before the trade deadline, his wide open three shot was worth 1.03 points per shot. After the trade deadline, that shot is now worth 1.46 points per shot. So again, defenses still leave him open, but now at least we know that he's for sure, you know, making them pay. And we saw it even in that game against the Rockets, where they left him open intentionally on a few attempts, and Malachi made some of them against Houston. So again, His three-point shooting is really the big takeaway from what I've seen in terms of his improvement. And, you know, when you just watch with the eye test, you do see that he's a little bit more aggressive defensively. He's really trying to stick with the person he's guarding. And I wanted to see if the numbers paint that picture, but unfortunately they don't. You know, there's not really any big differences in the numbers. His numbers actually look similar or a little bit better still from the before part. So again, numbers don't capture everything, but again, it looks like he's just been a little bit more decisive with his decision-making on both ends of the floor is what I've seen from Branham. And again, if that three's there for him, he is taking it. So we have seen some improvement from him from before the trade line deadline to after the trade deadline. And now we see that he's been a crucial part of the Spurs team past the trade deadline, where he's even been one of the top scorers for the team at certain nights. Okay, now coming into our last question, the big question, you know, as after the Spurs lost to the Rockets on Tuesday evening, I was looking at the schedule, you know, because I always tweet out what the record is and blah, blah, blah. And I always put how many games they have left. We're now down to the last 20 games, as I learned yesterday. So knowing that we're down to the last 20 games for the Spurs this season, I wanted to see, you know, where are they expected to finish and can they avoid their franchise record for worst losses? So what is the franchise record? It is for worst losses. It's 20-62, 20 wins. And that was the season in 1996-97, the year that they were so bad that they ended up getting Tim Duncan in the lottery the next year. So again, this year's team, the 23-24 team, is trying to avoid being worse than that team by record wise. And so the only way to do that, to at least tie that team, is to go 7-13 the rest of the way. So they would have to go 7-13. In these final 20 games in order to avoid having the worst franchise record for most losses in the season. So they're currently 13-49 based on some different models, whether you look at their current record winning percentage and or also cleaning the glasses on win differential model, they're expected to only win 17 games this the rest of the season. So again, I mean, 17 games for the season. So again, end up with 17 wins, which would set the franchise record for a season low. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to just look at their final 20 games and I'll post it on for the video format. But what I really want to do is kind of pencil in where can they find some of these wins to get those seven wins or even above and in order to avoid this this franchise record for the most losses. So one good thing for them is that they don't have the toughest schedule left in the league. According to Positive Residual, out of the games remaining for teams, the Spurs have the 15th toughest schedule, which is about league average. So again, 15th toughest schedule, no longer the toughest schedule in the NBA to end the season. They do have 20 games left, like I mentioned. 13 of their games are at least at home. And we do want to note that two of those games are going to be in Austin. So they count as Spurs home games, but they are going to be in Austin next weekend. I went down and broke down all their games, and I'm not going to go through every single game because that's just too many 20 games, but I did want to note the rest days that they're going to have. So in these final 20 games, they're going to have 14 days where they're going to have one day of rest in between the game. So they have 14 sequences where they'll have one day of rest in between a game. They're going to have 2 days of rest three different times in these final 20 games. And then they're also going to have three back-to-backs in their final 20 games. So again, there's also some back-to-backs they got to worry about. Now, as I went through their schedule individually by each game in these final 20, I noted some teams that I think they should beat. Either they'll be favored or they might just barely be an underdog against. And again, if they can at least pencil these games in as wins, then this will get them up to five wins on getting to that seven wins that they need. So those teams would be the Brooklyn Nets, who they're going to play at home in San Antonio. They're going to get Brooklyn one more time. They're going to get the Memphis Grizzlies twice, both in San Antonio and then also at Memphis. So again, if they can beat the Grizzlies twice, that's three wins. They're going to get the Jazz on the road at Utah. And again, you would think that because Utah's, you know, not headed for the play-in tournament, they're not a playoff level team, that the Spurs and them, you know, and their rosters are kind of similar there, that the Spurs should beat them. But we did see what happened in the most recent game where the Spurs lost at Utah pretty, you know, they got beat by double digits there. So again, if they can at least figure out a way to beat Utah in Utah, that's a fourth win. And then of course the Spurs should beat the Detroit Pistons, who they play on the final game of the season in San Antonio. They've already beaten them there in Detroit. They actually blew him out in that game back in January when Wemby had a triple double. So if the Spurs can get a win against Detroit, that would give them five wins that you can pencil in there. So now, you know, again, that's only five wins. That doesn't get you to seven to tie the franchise record. You would need to get, you know, seven to tie the franchise record, or eight to avoid being tied with that franchise record. So that means that they would need some more, at least two or three surprise wins. And again, I don't know where those are going to come from, but they've shown that they can do it. They beat Minnesota before. They beat recently Oklahoma City. They beat Indiana. So if they can get some of those, what I would call surprising wins, where they weren't supposed to beat, you know, one of these favorites against them, then if they can get two or three of those kind of wins, also while beating those teams they should probably beat on paper, then they can avoid this record of having the most losses in a franchise history for a season. So again, their goal is to at least get to 20 wins at minimum to at least tie the franchise record, or to get above that, then they should at least get 21 or more wins. So again, we'll kind of see what happens here when these final 20 games, but yes, the ending to the regular season is quickly approaching here in these final 20 games of the regular season. Thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of the Spurs Cast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.